This is your Polycast for Thursday, April 28th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a TSA manager says his supervisor told him to profile Somalis at the Twin Cities Airport, and the House passes a jobs budget bill. Somali American community members have long complained of what they believe to be ethnic and religious profiling at the Twin Cities Airport. It's common to hear stories of innocent travelers repeatedly being pulled aside for extra screening while trying to catch a flight or returning home. And now an official with the Transportation Security Administration in Minneapolis has testified that his supervisor instructed him to profile imams and other Somali Americans visiting the TSA's offices. Laura Ewan has the story.
Drew Rhodes is an assistant federal security director for the TSA, and he's also a liaison who's worked to build relationships with local Somali Americans. At a hearing yesterday in Washington, D.C., Rhodes told the House Oversight Committee that his supervisor recently gave him an order he could not obey.
Recently, I was asked to profile Somali imams and community members visiting my office. I will not do this. Those in the community in Minneapolis know I would never betray their trust by profiling them.
Rhodes says earlier this month, his supervisor asked him to check the names of potential visitors to the TSA offices in Minneapolis with the agency's field intelligence officer. In an employee evaluation, his boss had written that he reminded Rhodes, quote, that with our current world affairs, we need to be mindful of those we interact with. Rhodes says he considered that order to be an example of profiling. At the committee hearing, he didn't stop there. Rhodes told Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton that his colleagues viewed his outreach work in the community negatively.
I was accused of going native.
Going what?
Going native.
You'll have to explain that, sir.
Ma'am, it's a slang term where I was visiting mosques in my official role working with the Somali community where Jay Johnson, my secretary, tells me he wants me to conduct community outreach, and my supervisor accused me of going native. I take that to mean I'm somehow converting to Islam. I'm acting as a native. It's a disgusting, bigoted term.
Rhodes did not say definitively whether TSA screeners were profiling Somali American passengers flying through the Minneapolis-St. Paul airport. The hearing was more broadly focused on allegations of mismanagement and retaliation by agency leaders. And Rhodes had plenty to say about that, too. He alleges the TSA tried to transfer him to another state after he spoke out about security risks at the Twin Cities airport. But Rhodes's claims of racial or religious targeting are sure to reverberate here, home to the nation's largest Somali American community. Jaylani Hussein is executive director of the Council on American Islamic Relations Minnesota chapter. He says the TSA risks alienating entire swaths of people.
I think this is a counterproductive process, and it doesn't have any real merit. I mean, to identify an entire community as a community of suspects is unconstitutional.
Complaints of harassment towards Somali American travelers have gone on for years as federal agencies go on high alert for security risks. The concerns became pronounced in 2008 after the departures of several Twin Cities men who left for Somalia to join the terrorist group Al-Shabaab. And today, the focus is on young Minnesota recruits for ISIS in the Middle East. U.S. Attorney Andrew Luger, whose office is prosecuting the ISIS cases, has brought increased attention to concerns about the airport. He's worked with other federal agencies to reduce hassles that Muslims face while flying. The TSA said in a statement the agency is reviewing the complaint and that it does not tolerate racial profiling. But the spokesman said it would be unfair to conclude that profiling is common based on a single interaction between an employee and his supervisor. Minnesota's Congressman Keith Ellison wrote a letter to Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson yesterday about Drew Rhodes' allegations. Ellison said in a statement that the Somali American community and all Minnesotans deserve to know if TSA officials are engaging in racial, ethnic, or religious profiling. With reporting from Mukhtar Ibrahim, I'm Laura Ewan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The Minnesota House passed a budget bill last night that includes new spending to expand rural broadband, to promote tourism, and to tackle racial economic disparities. The bill also cuts several existing programs, including state subsidies for the movie industry. House Democrats are criticizing the Republican bill as another missed opportunity to make key investments with the $900 million budget surplus. Tim Pugmire reports.
House Republicans are moving a series of three supplemental spending bills that spend relatively little over current budget levels. They want the entire $900 million surplus used for transportation projects and tax cuts. The bill combining the agriculture, environment, and job development areas of the budget increases spending by just $12 million. Republican Representative Pat Garofalo of Farmington said the rest of the money in the bill used for new spending on broadband and other initiatives comes through cuts and reprioritizing the budget.
A lot of things are not necessarily bigger government or smaller government, but rather smarter government.
The bill cuts funding for two economic development programs, the Minnesota Investment Fund and the Job Creation Fund. It also eliminates money for the Minnesota Film Board and its snowbait incentive used to lure movie makers to the state. Garofalo said those government subsidies and perks have primarily benefited the Twin Cities metro area.
70% of those jobs are being created in the 11-county metro area. The metro area has a red-hot economy right now. We think a better strategy is, again, to get invested in infrastructure primarily in greater Minnesota, and then to have a more favorable business climate for all the businesses in Minnesota. That's the better way to grow jobs as opposed to trying to pick winners and losers.
The bill includes $6 million for proposals aimed at reducing racial economic disparities. DFL Governor Mark Dayton is seeking $100 million for similar efforts, and Senate Democrats want $91 million. DFL Representative Rena Moran of St. Paul criticized the bill's spending level during the House floor debate.
When we have a $900 million budget surplus, it is really unacceptable for us to not do more to address the economic disparities in our state. If not now, then when?
Democrats also took aim at the bill's broadband investment of $15 million in 2017. That's also just a fraction of what the governor and Senate are seeking. DFL Representative Paul Marquardt of Dilworth said the money is woefully inadequate and will put rural Minnesota further behind in economic development.
That really threatens rural Minnesota losing our young generation, our next generation of young leaders out to the metro area.
But House Republicans counter that their plan also comes with a pledge to make another $25 million broadband investment in 2018. Representative Garofalo said the money will help the state leverage additional federal money and private sector matches.
We've actually got so much investment coming that we may have a shortage in workers in terms of fiber optic cabling, trenching, installing this infrastructure. That's going to be a bigger concern. It's not that there's going to be a lack of money being spent on it.
With less than 4 weeks left in the session, Governor Dayton described the latest House supplemental budget bill as a waste of time. Dayton said Republicans appear to be more interested in election year politics than making needed investments.
If that's their position, then I don't know why we need to spend taxpayer money for the next 3.5 weeks. Why don't they just pack it up and go home?
The House bill provides grants to struggling businesses in the Mille Lacs Lake area as well as additional tourism promotion there. It includes a requirement for carbon monoxide detectors on new boats, a repeal of the 2014 law on child care unionization, money to complete the Lewis and Clark Water Project in southwestern Minnesota, and money for anticipated lawsuits related to the Polymet mining project. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Minneapolis parks may soon get a major infusion of cash. An $800 million 20-year spending plan for both parks and streets has cleared a key hurdle. A city council committee approved the ordinance unanimously yesterday, and passage by the full council is expected tomorrow. Backers of the measure say the new money will mean the park board will finally be able to address years of deferred maintenance. Matt Sepik has the story.
The maintenance backlog is obvious at nearly every one of Minneapolis's 160 neighborhood parks, and it's not just faded, squeaky playground equipment and cracked sidewalks. Many of the rec centers, built in a flurry of construction activity in the late 1960s and early 70s, have serious problems. At Longfellow Park, a heavy roof beam has finally yielded to decades of dripping icicles. The end of it, which sits on a brick wall, has about as much structural integrity as a pile of shredded paper. For the last year, former Hennepin County Commissioner Mark Andrew has headed up an effort to fix these problems. His group, Save Our Minneapolis Parks, has been pushing to put a tax referendum on the November ballot. But Andrew says this week's city council action means the issue will not have to go to voters.
This is a historic accomplishment by the city council. For some of these council members, this was the biggest vote they will ever take, because this literally saves the Minneapolis neighborhood parks from falling into irreversible decline.
Under the proposal, the park board would get an additional $8 million a year in bond funding for improvement projects, in addition to the $2.5 million it already gets. A 1% property tax increase is expected to bring in another $3 million annually for day-to-day operations. At yesterday's committee meeting, Councilmember Abdi Warsami praised the plan. He says the new money will mean big improvements in his ward to PV and Curry Parks, the Brian Coyle Community Center, and the Phillips Pool.
People talk about areas of concentration of poverty. People talk about people of color. People have mentioned equity and racial equity. But this is, in the time I've been in the council, this is the biggest investment that we have made in terms of addressing the racial equity gap.
The proposal passed 11-0, but there was some vocal opposition from citizens. Minneapolis NAACP President Nikema Levy-Pound said the council should delay voting on the funding until the park board addresses complaints that it treats its employees of color unfairly.
They're not being promoted or retained in an equitable manner in comparison to their white counterparts. We do not have a place for a Jim Crow system in the city of Minneapolis, but that's exactly what's happening.
Parks Board employee Cynthia Wilson, who's African-American, says she's been demoted several times. Wilson filed a lawsuit in 2013 after park administrators fired her for allegedly failing to supervise an employee properly. She appealed the decision and was rehired, but says she again became the target of baseless investigations. Wilson says she loves her job, but told council members the park board needs to take a serious look at the way it treats its employees of color before getting any additional funds.
You give this money, what you're doing is you're saying, hey, we're going to close our eyes. You continue to be a racist organization. You continue to treat these people the way you want to, and we're going to close our eyes to it. I say, yes, we need some money, but not at this way.
Park Commissioner and Board President Liz Walensky says over the last 5 years, Superintendent Jane Miller has made racial equity training a priority.
We do know that this is a long, long, long-term process, and we are dedicated to completing it and going forward. I don't think there's ever a point when you're talking about racial issues where there's an end point.
Walensky says on Monday the board will post on its website a detailed response to the concerns. Pending final passage of the funding measure, Minneapolis Parks will get the additional money from 2017 through 2036. The ordinance provides even more cash for city streets, an additional $21 million a year on top of current spending. With reporting from Manda Lilly, I'm Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.